Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There is no better group of plants for flower power than forms of the shrubby potentilla.
Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to help you with some of your gardening quandaries. Later on, I'll be joined by a fellow broadcaster who I respect greatly, a presenter of the great Pebble Mill on BBC One. She now chairs a local gardening programme in the North East on BBC Radio Newcastle. It's Marion Foster. Our thanks to Thompson & Morgan, sponsors of this week's podcast. Goodness, what a scorcher. It took me all my time to try and get off the end of a hose. But really, if the soil's not really damp deep down, it's a job to get enough moisture to the roots for plants to withstand those temperatures of 30 degrees centigrade or 90 plus Fahrenheit. It's been an interesting week for me. Last week, of course, was Gardeners World Live. I had a couple of days up there. Nice to meet so many people. And then flew to Holland for what are called the International Pack Trials. I spent a day travelling with two nurserymen and two garden centre operators. And it was very interesting, really, when we saw a new plant or an unusual plant, to hear what the growers had to say about it, and then what the retailers had to say about it, and then what I thought about it as a gardener. You know, things that were very easy for the grower to produce in top quality may not have attracted the eye of the retailer. And again, will it actually perform well and flower forever? I mean, for example, we were looking at a strawberry variety called Ruby Anne, and the grower said, "Oh, that's fantastic. The breeder does a wonderful job. We can grow that very easily from seed." Well, I was looking at the variety Just Add Cream that was alongside it, which of course has to be vegetatively propagated, and so it costs more. And then we went into the debate as to would people pay more for a plant which would have a lovely flavour. And so the discussions continued. There's a new celosia, a coxcomb called Act Verdia. A really weird looking thing, well named because the flower is just like the comb on a cockerel. And then with hydrangeas, goodness, there's so many new hydrangeas. I'll try and cover some of this in the next few weeks. We saw lots and lots of exciting new things for the garden. I see that one of our seed companies for the new season, 2018, is going to be offering a pre-germinated seeds. Now, we had these about 20 or 30 years ago, where they used to put the seed in a drum, let it revolve in a warm temperature with some moisture, and as the seed just started to germinate, they would stop the process and then aluminium foil seal the seeds, and for 2 or 3 weeks you could sow them and they would come up much quicker, regardless of soil conditions, than untreated seed. The problem then was that you had to do it within that 2 to 3 week period. Well, now I understand they have the technology that can start the germination going and then hold it for up to 2 years. Now, I'm trying to lay hands on a few samples of seed ahead of this launch in the autumn. We'll keep you updated on what's happening. I understand, too, that Marshall Seeds are offering a new kind of French bean to all members of the National Vegetable Society. They're going to grow this bean and then put it on show in the autumn vegetable shows. And there are some quite wacky prizes. So if you're a member of the NVS, you look out for this new variety of French bean. But what about the things to do in the garden this week? I was with a school, and a young lad of 10, I was showing him how to spray tomatoes and cucumbers to prevent attack from whitefly. And he said to me, "I don't kill bugs." Well, now there's an interesting situation. Most of us don't like killing things. But if you don't protect tomatoes and cucumbers from whitefly, and there are a few whitefly about at present, then within 6 to 8 weeks, the whole plant can be absolutely smothered in them, and there'll be black mould growing on the fruits and the leaves. So I'm afraid sometimes we do have to intervene a bit if we want to get reasonable, clean crops and heavy yields. I mean, in the case of the tomatoes and cucumbers of that school, we were using a thing called SB Plant Invigorator. It's an organic means of stimulating growth and controlling quite a range of pests, particularly whitefly and red spider, and I found it particularly effective.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I have a very special guest and a very special place for her today. It's Marion Foster up there in Newcastle, who those of you in the northeast listen to Garden Mania will, I'm sure, recognise the voice. And some of our old friends from Pebble Mill at One all those years ago, they'll recognise voices too. Do you reckon, Marion?
It's strange, isn't it? We might change. The hair might go a little bit grey, and we might put on a bit of weight or lose a bit of weight, but our voices all seem to stay the same. And it's wonderful. Sometimes I'll be in a shop. I remember once in London, and I heard a voice. I was in the middle of the sales, and here was this gentleman buying some gloves, an elderly gentleman, and I didn't know who he was. But when he spoke, I thought, I know that voice, I know that voice. And I realised that as a child I'd heard Alvar Liddell on the radio reading the news and doing all the announcements. And just hearing that voice, there were lots of memories flooded back. He may have changed it. I didn't know what he looked like anyway. But just hearing the voice in the middle of the sales with all these women pushing and shoving and buying gloves and scarves. And here was this very, very gentlemanly gentleman just buying some nice leather gloves and his beautiful BBC voice.
Marion, I would love to have met him. He was the voice of radio, wasn't he?
He was. I mean, I didn't say anything to him. I was a bit sort of overawed, but I thought, I've seen him. I've seen him and I've heard him in the flesh.
Yeah. And I mean, if I'm out shopping with the family, quite honestly, we can get away with all kinds of things as long as I don't speak. And people do recognise the voice,
that's
don't
right,
they? Very quickly.
Right. Yeah.
But Marion, we did so many of those little gardening spots at Pebble Mill from September to May,
yeah,
when the weather was not always perfect, when the wind hit that 8-storey building and curled. I hope you still have some memories of those windswept plots.
Oh, absolutely. I have a memory of your very first plot, which ended up being cemented over so that the fire brigade could have access to the back door of the building. But in the first year that you started working on Pebble Mill at One, you created a sensation. Was it something like 10 foot by 12 foot?
That's correct. 10
plot.
Foot by 12 foot, £1 to spend, and you were expected to pick vegetables to feed four twice a week.
Yes.
Yes.
With an hour's work.
Yes, that's right.
A week or something. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I remember after the programme, people used to think we'd go swanning off and doing all sorts of things, but you would end up working a bit more in the garden, and many of us would end up back in the office putting thousands of information sheets, fact sheets, they were called, into envelopes. Because in those days, in the olden days, in the 1970s, people used to send in self-addressed envelopes and ask for fact sheets. And your little garden, your tiny little allotment plot, had thousands and thousands of people writing in every week, and it was all hands on deck. Everybody had to fill in all these envelopes and send them off. Of course, now people just click on a button and listen to a podcast, or they send a tweet, or you know, all sorts of electronic messages and things. But in those days, literally, they had to sit down after the program, write a letter, send another envelope with it, and then we had to fill it after after our programs. So that was, children, various people who had children in the family, the children would come in after school and help. It was a real family thing.
Without question. I mean, the first broadcast I did for Pebble Mill was on Christmas houseplants, and I was supposed to do 8 minutes. And then you know what happens, you know, the singer overran a bit and an interview overran a bit, and my minutes were chipped and chipped and chipped until in the end I just had 3 minutes, not eight. And I went through all the plants I'd got at a rate of knots and said, sorry, there wasn't more time if you send for a fact sheet. And we had 12,500 letters.
Yeah.
And it took my son and my dad an hour to open 250. I mean, that's a... I certainly have feelings for you in the office.
I know.
Filling those envelopes. Book? Yeah.
Was that the first book that you wrote when you did a book about that vegetable plot? Because in the end it was decided, you had to write a book because we were getting fed up with filling all these envelopes. This way it was easier just to send a little book out. And I think it cost 50 pence or something.
It did.
And it was. I've still got one tucked away in the house because... all the sort of basic advice never changes. But I've often wondered if that was your first book, because you've written an awful lot since then.
It was the first book that was really successful, I think, and it sold 900,000 and is now in either 11 or 12 languages. It went from the booklet up into hardback, and now there's a Finnish edition, a Swedish, a Norwegian, a Brazilian. It went to a very good packager.
But, you know, you introduced me to Chelsea. I'd never been to Chelsea before, but I was sent down to do the lunchtime program from there and to see what you had created for Chelsea. And you had put on the most amazing display of radishes. And I'd never seen so many radishes. Do you remember? Because you got a medal for it. And there was nothing but radishes.
32 different kinds of radish, yes, that's right. All colours, purple, yellow, pink, white, red and white, long ones, short ones, round ones. It's still fun, and I've repeated it once. We got some schools to do it about 5 years ago. It's amazing the variety that there is in our business.
And then the following year, you got another medal, I remember, for doing a replica of that 12 by 10 foot vegetable plot.
Yeah.
And that again, when you almost got a gold. I remember you got a silver gilt, and I remember thinking, what's a silver gilt?
Second,
it's nearly a gold, but not quite. It's very frustrating.
Second place, yes. It's a story of my life, usually second place.
You're one of the survivors in this world when it comes to broadcasting and journalism, and you've kept going a very long time, Peter. I mean, I sometimes wonder, you know, where you get all the energy from, or is it all those radishes you've been eating over the years?
I think it's spending an hour or so through the winter digging each day. You know, it just keeps you fit. But Marion, you still have a very good following in the Northeast, don't you? Now, what can you tell us about gardening in the Northeast and the local radio?
Well, it's one of the amazing things, isn't it, that despite all the books and the magazines and the newspapers and all the different ways people can find out things about gardening now, people still like to pick up the phone and ring up their local radio station. I think there are nearly 30 BBC local radio stations that actually still have a gardener's phone in. And it never changes. Even in the middle of December, I'll still get one or two calls, because there's always something that somebody wants to ask about gardens and plants. And it's just like it was in the days when I worked with you, Peter. I was like the catalyst. I was the one who helped out and presented the program, but really I helped the callers to put their questions across, and I always have an expert with me. I have a lovely chap called Gary Phillipson, who's a complete hoot at the moment. We have a lot of wonderful laughs, and he's with me at the moment. And then in a couple of months' time, because he's been promoted and he's got a fantastic job with the BBC Tees instead of BBC Newcastle, I'm going to lose him in the August. So
you can't go south of the river. Come on.
I know. But, he was born in Middlesbrough and, tugs at the heartstrings.
Yeah.
But he's got himself a very good job, so he goes with my blessings. But fortunately, I have a little team, I have a regular person who helps out from time to time. And John Guy, who's the head of horticulture at Northumberland College, is going to come in and be my new partner in crime, in gardening crime, as from mid-August, because that's when the football season starts. My program for years has gone out between 1 and 2 on a Sunday. And you wouldn't believe the number of football matches up here that start early. And I keep getting knocked off the air because they have to, Sunderland's got a match or Newcastle's got a match or, something else is happening. So now I'm going to be on the air between 9 and 10. So half of me is thinking, oh no, I'm going to have to get up early on a Sunday. But the other half knows that at least my program's not going to be knocked off the air by football. I mean, I'm a football fan. I enjoy football, but I get it's a bit much when I lose, during the winter, a lot of programmes to the football enthusiasts.
But it's the same with BBC Two and Gardener's World, isn't it? Snooker keeps potting them black and causing great aggravation in the gardening circles.
Yeah.
Don't they realise that there are more people gardening than there are playing snooker? Yeah.
Yes, well, they haven't learned that lesson, and we've been trying to teach them it for two or three generations, I think.
And your 9 till 10 is a very good time, don't you think? I mean, people get up on a Sunday a little later, sitting having breakfast. You should be perfect for gardeners before they go out and get gardening.
That's right. Well, I have had that time slot before for a gardening phone-in some years ago now. And I did get a lot of callers because people were getting ready to go out and work on the allotment, mow the back lawn before the guests arrived or friends arrived, in the afternoon. Of course, now, Peter, I'm getting all these tweets and messages that come in with photographs, and I can see instantly, which is wonderful because in the past, you must have had this as well, where somebody would come up to you or you'd get a phone call and someone would say, I've got this mystery plant and I don't know if it's a weed or if it's something I should be keeping and I don't know what to do with it. And so you say, well, describe it. And they always say, well, it's green.
It's green. I was in a cab recently in London and the driver said he'd got this eyeball plant. And it was really very pretty, but it made a terrible mess. Now, what do you think an eyeball plant is, Marion? It turned out, after much questioning, to be a cistus with a large single flower and a yellow centre. So it was white and yellow, looked like a fried egg, and so he called it the eyeball plant.
I can match you with that one. I did get a phone call from someone, and actually it was just a few days after I had returned from a trip to China. And this person said, I've got this Buddha plant. And I wonder if you could tell me how it should. And at that time, I had two other lovely people, Stan and Eddie, who had been doing the gardening slots for BBC Newcastle for over 30 years. And the three of us sat around the table and we were a complete blank. We couldn't think what she was talking about. And then little messages started flashing up on my screen from one of my friends who answers the calls, takes the initial calls. People was ringing in saying, do you think they're talking about a Buddleia?
Oh, goodness.
And I'm thinking, because I'd actually seen some sort of mock tree when I was in Hong Kong that they called a Buddha tree. Oh, yes, it must be some amazing oriental thing. And it turns out to be a Buddleia. So there you are, you see. It's because we give our plants so many strange names, actually. I mean, I still get confused about names, and never mind the Latin names, but there's something weird about plants. There's so many of them have long, convoluted names. And if you've never heard anyone say the name, but you just read it, you have to make a bit of a guess, and sometimes it can be quite confusing.
With luck, you hit it. But Marion, you haven't given up. I mean, you're actually studying horticulture now. Is that right?
That's right. All these years that I've worked with people like you, Peter, where you've been the expert and I've been the learner. And then When I got into my 60s and retired from full-time BBC work, I thought, you know, perhaps I should go to some classes and learn a bit more, because I helped out and produced gardening programs for such a long time that people thought I knew as much as the experts. Of course I didn't. You know, I was always too busy doing technical things, etc. And but people just did think that I knew as much as everybody else. And I thought, you know, I'm going to have to do some learning. So I started off with a level one, and then I worked to a level two, and then I worked my way through the certificates that you can get from the RHS. And then I enjoyed it so much that when I sort of got through most of those, I decided to do a diploma, the National Diploma in Horticulture. And I found it fascinating, because part of the joy for me is here I was in my 60s, learning all about gardening and horticulture with young people, some who were still in their teens, some who were mature, but I was mixing with a young group, and it was just huge fun. It was quite challenging, though, because I have arthritis, and when I was doing the diploma, I had a gammy hip, as we say up here. The hip had gone. I had to learn how to use a tractor and how to back a trailer into a garage, you know, all these sort of things that you need to know if you want to be a proper gardener. You have to be able to use equipment.
Well, I'm not sure I'd be very good at backing a trailer on a traction.
And a forklift truck. I had a teenage nephew who was learning how to use a forklift truck, and I said, you'll never guess, your old auntie's learning how to do it as well. I had to sit side saddle half the time because my hip just wouldn't do it. And I got through it in the end. And what I find is that whenever I finish one of these courses, I've just enjoyed them so much, and I've found, and you know, I'm learning so much. I just enjoy the learning, and I enjoy mixing with everybody. So every time I get to the end of the course, I have a break for a while, then I think, oh, I'm bored. Start doing another one.
Well, good for you, Marion. If you can remind us in August when you have that change of time for Garden Mania, we'll remind our listeners that they'll need to change, because everybody can get local radio now, can't they, on their computers?
Yes, they can. Yes, yeah. They can. It's a magic world, isn't it? You know, sometimes the world takes me aback, as it does, I think, for a lot of people, but there are some amazing things. There are some amazing blessings in amongst it as well. Peter, it's been lovely talking to you, and, you know, you'll have to come on my program sometime.
I look forward to that, Marion. It's great to be in touch with you. After some really strong wind 10 days ago, I'm afraid some of the taller roses in my garden took a terrible bashing. And so the deadheading needs to be done a bit ruthlessly. And if you have got roses that are starting to go over, then just cast your eye down the stem until you come to a really good strong leaf with a bud at the base. And that's where you prune. You cut off about 6 to 8 inches of stem back to a good strong leaf, and then there'll be some really strong growth for a second flush of flowers. And when that second flush does start to grow, particularly with most of the hybrid tea and bush and shrub roses, it's worth getting 2 sprays of systemic fungicide on. If you do that, if you actually get the fungicide into the young growth, then it will give really good protection against mildew, rust and black spot diseases. The early bird certainly catches that worm. And really, once you've had a really good deadhead and prune through, then it's worth giving that second lot of rose fertiliser. You know, the first lot went on in the spring, another lot now. And if the weather is a bit dry, if you're on the east of the country, well, then a really good watering helps. If you're anywhere near Essex, then next Sunday I'll be opening the Little Waltham Gardens. The opening is in aid of our local hospice. I think there'll be some very pretty gardens, and there'll be some vintage motor cars to have a look at. So if you're at a loose end, why not come and look at some gardens and raise a bit of money for the local hospice. That's the Little Waltham Gardens open in Essex. Thanks again to our sponsors, Thompson and Morgan. And thanks to you for listening. We'll be back next Thursday. Discover more at sungardening.co.uk. Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.